I've been told live demos are kind of like NASCAR. They're fun if nobody crashes, but half of the entertainment is waiting for it to break. So let's hope that I disappoint you guys. There we go. So as stated, I'm Colin. I've been to present HomeOS, which is something I've been working on with people at Microsoft Research for about the last two and a half years. So before I dive too deeply into sort of some details, I wanted to give you an idea of what HomeOS is. So HomeOS is an operating system for the home that provides a PC-like organization for this connected devices in that home. And that means that sort of we pretend as though these devices are directly connected to a single logical PC. And this eases the way you can manage and extend homes with new and cool features. It's been running in 12 real homes for between 4 and 8 months, and 42 different student developers across about 10 different institutions have written apps and drivers for HomeOS. So really, this talk started with one question, which is, it's the future, where's my jetpack? And by jetpack, I mean smart home. But what do I really mean by a smart home? When I think of a smart home, what I mean is that we have all of these devices in my home today. I have things like PCs, smartphones, thermostats, locks, cameras that are all connected. So I should be able to compose them in order to do useful things. They should be able to seamlessly come together and cater to my wants and needs, providing things like climate control that knows when my cell phone leaves work, figures out how long it's going to take me to get home, and sets the temperature so that would be the right way when I get home. But despite the fact that we have this stuff, there's a big gap between the potential and the reality of smart homes today. What I just described has been envisioned by researchers, companies, and even the focus of a Disney movie. And it's been commercially available since the 1970s, and this stuff is actually reasonably inexpensive today. You can actually go out and buy locks, window blind actuators, thermostats, light switches, all for $50 to $100. Go to Amazon and type in home automation, you'll be stunned. But it's still struggling to break into the mainstream. And it wasn't entirely obvious to us why. So the first thing we realized is that there are people that do have smart homes. And we talked to 31 of them across 14 different households. We found that they really liked the fact that they had the convenience, peace of mind, and control over their house that such automation provided. But they had difficulty in two key areas that we think point out why it is that smart homes haven't come to be. And the first is that there is poor extensibility, and the second is that there's poor manageability. In terms of extensibility, whether you're trying to add new devices or new sort of applications or logical tasks to your house, it's very difficult to figure out if something's going to work. And even if it will theoretically work, getting it in practice installed and integrated is difficult. And this is particularly troubling because both when talking with these people and in our deployments, we found that people want to organically grow their homes, adding a few devices or applications at a time, meaning this is a really ongoing problem that causes pain and misery. Second is a management pain. So typically, you have to manage each individual device in your house, and this is particularly nasty when it comes to things like security and access control, where you have to rely on either the application or the device in order to provide a set of tools for you to use, and configuring them is often difficult, and a lot of times this results in things like just having to either set it visible to everybody or nobody gets to use it, which is basically choosing between inconvenience and insecurity. And we believe that these two problems stem directly from the wrong abstraction being offered to users and developers when it comes to dealing with home technology. So today, there are really two existing abstractions for technology in the home. The first is that of a network of devices. And this arises from interoperability protocols, which have been sort of a very noble effort in order to try and get this home environment to work right. But things like DLNA and Z-Wave provide the ability to share media or do small home automation tasks. And they really provide open, low-level interfaces to individual devices so that you can reach out and control them. And the second abstraction is that of sort of a closed appliance, a monolithic system, kind of like your home security system, your climate control system. But these are a fixed set of tasks over a fixed set of devices. And so neither of them is a really good fit for solving our manageability and extensibility issues. A network of devices might at least enable easy extensibility in the sense that you can just plug any device you want in, but it leaves management being still a nightmare. Users still have to manage each individual device and task by themselves, and the developers who might be able to help by building software are faced with the same problem, where they have to understand each device and all of its peculiarities in order to offer any solution. Appliances, on the other hand, might be able to handle management a little bit better because they have closed sets of logical devices, but extensibility is still very difficult. Unless the person who wrote the appliance thought of what you want to do, you're unlikely to be able to get that functionality out of it, to be able to add the new devices and the new tasks that you want. So how do we get out of this regime? How do we get to some place where we can actually get both nice extensibility and nice manageability? Well, in HomeOS, we view the home as a PC. All of the network devices in the home we view as peripherals attached to that PC with drivers to reach out and control them. Tasks that sort of run logically across these devices are just applications that might run on a PC. And so adding a device is the same as plugging in a peripheral, adding a task is the same as installing an application, and managing network devices is roughly the same as, you know, managing your files on your computer. So how does this look in practice? So in HomeOS, we have our logical set of devices in the home. And HomeOS logically centralizes all of these devices by running across them and using drivers in order to reach out and access them. And these different protocols that devices speak are actually maturing to the point which you can write reasonable drivers and get a surprisingly high amount of coverage with a surprisingly little amount of coding effort. On top of this, applications run and get access to the devices via the drivers. And the applications provide the cross-device functionality, as opposed to being provided by the devices themselves or by the user's hand coordinating things. At this point, users can interact with HomeOS to centrally manage all of their technology, rather than having to deal with each individual device and individual application. And we can even couple this with a home store, which can provide intelligent information about compatible applications and compatible devices with the home. So, just because I said it's like a PC operating system doesn't quite make us done. There are a set of challenges in the home that are not as widely present in the PC. And in particular, we have three of them that we're particularly interested in. So the first is that in the home, and particularly in a home networked environment, non-expert users have to suddenly become network managers. And we need to provide them with rich, but at the same time, easy-to-use access control policies. And this is because misconfigurations have much higher consequences in the home, when a misconfiguration can result in being able to unlock the front door by a malicious application or spying on you in your own home. Second, in the PC, building applications is easy. But in the home, heterogeneity is making things incredibly difficult. Different houses want to run different sets of applications. They want to control those applications in different ways. They want to have different devices, both in terms of brands, but also in kinds of devices. Some homes might have a lot of different kinds. Some might have fewer. And they want to connect them in different ways, whether it's Z-Wave, Zigbee, Wi-Fi, 3G. They want to have all sorts of different guys. And lastly, new classes of devices and applications arrive very frequently. Things like the Kinect energy meters and connected TVs are all products of the last few years. This doesn't show any time of slowing down. So if HomeOS has to be updated every time there's a new kind of device, we're probably in trouble. So really, this first challenge is really about manageability. And these second two are really about extensibility to new tasks and extensibility to new devices. So it's really just these two key problems again. So we address these by having three main goals in HomeOS. The first is that we want easy management for users and non-experts. And we do this by having management primitives that align with users' mental models. The second is that we want to simplify application development. And we do this by having protocol-independent abstract APIs for devices, so developers can easily write things that compose all the devices in the home. And lastly, we want to be able to rapidly include new features and new devices. And so we have a kernel that's totally agnostic to the particular protocols that are spoken across it. So we map these ways we answer the goals onto a layered model for technology in the home. So at the bottom we have, and each layer addresses one of the forms of heterogeneity that I mentioned on the previous slide. So at the bottom layer, the device connectivity layer deals with connectivity different types and making sure that we centralize the devices into one place. The functionality layer actually provides the interesting APIs which developers can use. The management layer gives users control, and the applications layer is where tasks actually run. So at the bottom, the connectivity layer, or the DCL, and the functionality layer, or the DFL, are the drivers in HomeOS. And the DCL provides just base connectivity, and the DFL takes that base connectivity and turns it into useful services for developers. And services are protocol independent, and they're identified using roles and operations. You can see three examples at the bottom, one for a dimmer switch, one for a media renderer that can play video and audio, and one for a pan, tilt, zoom camera. And you note that sort of the names and the functions are things that you can imagine easily writing an application against. And critically, the kernel does not interpret these in any way, so as long as a driver and an application agree on the interface, they can go whole hog and do whatever they want to do. Lastly, a point is that there's a layer of indirection between the protocols and applications in this model, which means that we get sort of the best of both worlds in terms of standardization. Developers get to use high-level APIs they understand. Device manufacturers can use whatever protocol meets their needs, regardless of what their needs happen to be. So the management layer is a little bit more complicated because you actually have to understand what users want to do with their homes. And so in the process of talking to people about home automation, we were able to identify a set of needs that they had. And in particular in this talk, the management layer, I'm going to focus on access control. And they had three needs that are different from how we typically implement access control in PCs today. The first need is that they wanted time-based access control. And they really wanted this for two pain points. One was parental controls, and the other was guest accounts. They wanted people to say that, like, the babysitter has access to the house from 5 to 10 on Friday, but after that, the account vanishes, and I don't have to worry about what the babysitter's allowed to do a week from now, a year from now, or 10 years from now in the home. Second, they want applications as security principles. And just a lot of things in the access control home made a lot more sense in terms of applications. The music player in your house should never be allowed to unlock the front door, regardless of which user it's running on behalf of. And lastly, users wanted easy to verify settings. Actually, this came up more than easy to use settings was easy to tell that you've configured it correctly, to actually be able to ask questions and say, did I reach the intent that I intended to have? So in order to make this, in order to meet these requirements, we implemented access control policy in the form of data log-based rules. And these rules might seem a little bit complicated, but they are amenable to English language sentences really easily. So if this is basically users in the given group can access a given device via a given application from a certain time of day to a certain time of day on a certain day of the week with a certain priority. Priorities are used to manage conflicting accesses with a certain access mode, which can be either ask or allow. Ask was something people wanted to have when they didn't know whether the answer was going to be allow or deny immediately, and they wanted to be able to tell later when the accesses actually happened. You know that these rules include both time and applications, which means that we can satisfy the first two of our requirements. And lastly, because of their structure, these rules are easily queryable to ask questions like, who is allowed, what applications are ever allowed to unlock the front door? Or who is allowed to look at the camera in the baby's room after 10 p.m.? And these are very simple to answer and provide back to users. And this is in large part because these rules are simpler than the ACLs used in current commodity operating systems, including Windows, which oftentimes have places to insert scripts and other things, which make it very hard to reason about. And they also scale a lot better than sort of the currently compelling access control models that are proposed in sort of the more usability areas, which is where you have a list of users on one side and devices across the top, because we can scale to four dimensions. So we can actually handle time and applications. And I don't know about you, but I have trouble conceptualizing four-dimensional grids. Lastly, we have the application layer. And the application layer, applications consume and compose the services offered by the DFL. But the management layer is actually able to interpose on all of these accesses. The users are still remain in complete control. And they have this one layer of control between all applications and all devices in their home. Manifests are attached with each application. And they, we'll see some of the evidence of that in a demo. But they contain information about what the application needs to run in the home and what it could use. And these provide features both for testing compatibility, but also it minimizes the number of potential rules that users have to configure because the set of valid accesses is constrained by the kinds of devices these things are able to use. So now I'm going to switch over to the demo for a second. And Perfect. So this is HomeOS running on this laptop. You can see that I have no installed applications and no running applications. So let's go to Manage Your Home Network, Applications, and the window appears on the wrong screen again. So here we have a list of our installed applications. You can see that I have none, so I can go to Add a New Application, and the window again appears on the wrong screen. So you can see a list. This is the home store with ratings and different applications. In particular, I'm interested in the home viewer application. But you can see that it needs additional devices. So if I click here, you can see that it needs a camera. And if I click on the camera, I can actually see that there are two different cameras that will satisfy the need. And theoretically, I could go buy them from this interface. Fortunately, I brought the two with me. So let's get out of here and instead go add these cameras to our home. So if I go to manage devices, I again have to grab the window. Ritual told me not to do this, and I ignored him. So I can go to pair a new device. And you can see that I'll have two different cameras up on the up here. And so let's start with this camera. I'm going to enter the username and password for this camera. And you'll like the very high security that I have. And now when I press OK, it's going to go off and try and find this camera, configure it, and get it up and working. So in the meantime, while I'm waiting for that to sort of take, it takes about a minute, I'll tell you a little about the implementation. The implementation is about 20,000 lines of C# code in total. About 3,000 lines of that are in the kernel of the operating system. We have about 20 different applications. The applications are each between 300 and 500 lines of C#, so they're pretty simple. Drivers are similarly simple since they're usually mapping down onto existing drivers that are already in the operating system. We've built drivers for things like DLNA and Z-Wave, which allow for sort of standard home automation stuff in the case of Z-Wave, and actually moving media like audio and video around your house with DLNA. We built applications everything from the stupidly simple to turning on and off a light to the somewhat complicated of being able to give somebody access to an object, say open a lock, based on recognizing their face in a camera and recognizing a spoken password in a microphone. And these things are all pretty simple to build. So now I think the device should be ready. So let's add this paired device. And it is, but it's on the wrong screen. So here we can see the camera is up and running. I'm going to press OK. And it's going to pop up another window, which says this is basically how we configure, how we add the application, add the device. And you can see that we can specify a location for it. I'm going to say this one is indoors. There's an option to make it high security, which I'm not going to use here, but it prevents accidentally and guaranteeing access to high security devices on behalf of applications. I'm going to give it a new name, which is going to be useful for me. And I'm going to call it My Access Cam. And when I press OK, it will actually add it to the house. I can go back to Applications now. Really. And I can go to Add a New Application again. And now you'll be able to see that this application is, in fact, compatible with the home. So the Home Viewer application now says compatible with the home. I'm going to go ahead and install that. I'm going to click. It's going to load up the module. Oh, no, sorry. Do we really have that many windows? OK. So normally I'm not used to running this on with two displays that one of them you guys can't see. So you can see by default it suggests it's usable to all residents. I'm just going to accept that. But I'm going to call it my cam app, just so that way I know what it is. I'm not having to use the vendor's names. And so you'll see that it's by default given access to my access cam because that matches one of the roles in its manifest. So it in fact knows that that's something it can use. Here I could restrict access further by time and by particular pairings of users and devices so that way people could only use the devices in their room. But I'm going to skip that and just click finish, at which point you'll see the application appears and I can run it. And if you give it a second, it will load up, actually go find the camera. And you can see that because this is supposed to be mounted on a ceiling, you guys are all upside down. But you can wave and smile to the camera. And just to show that this works with a variety of different kinds of cameras, you'll see there's another black camera up here, which is from a different vendor. And I can actually add this device as well, and it's going to automatically work. And you'll see another nice feature of Home OS. So if I go here, and you're going to like this password even more, admin blank, that's always useful. And so while this is running, I'm going to give you a quick, well, this is finding that camera and actually getting the drivers up and running. I want to show you the fact that we also have a web interface and actually this also works on smartphones. So if I load this page up, it's connecting to the Home OS over, and you can imagine this happening over the cloud. Right now it's happening locally for the purpose of this demo. And yes, the password is going in the clear at the moment. I think Ritual can answer that. I think Ritual wrote this. And you'll really like this password too. So when I press go, this will actually reach out, connect to the running Home OS. And we'll find the particular camera, which, there we go. And now you can see yourself upside down. And this works on smartphones, it works on the mobile web. So the result is that you can actually get some pretty cool access to, so you can get that as well in addition to being running locally. So now that this device is finished pairing, I'm gonna go to add it, to actually configure it to work with applications. You can come back here, I'll add it. And in this case, what you'll see is that not only do I have the normal thing where I can give it a name, but I can also see that the MyCam app is already compatible with it. So I can just check this box, and when I press OK, it will actually do the right thing, and I'll get a second camera window, which I can drag over here, looking at the other side of the room, so now you guys can also smile and wave at the camera. And so that's sort of the basics of Home OS. There's a lot more features that I didn't demonstrate, but you get an idea that it is real and it does work. It's automatically discovering these devices and actually doing useful things with them. Now let me see if I can actually get this to stop. All right, so here we go. So what are we going to evaluate about Home OS? So the two key things we wanted to accomplish were that we wanted to make it usable by non-technical users and make it so that developers could easily write applications. And we did this in two ways. One, with field experiences with 12 real homes and 42 student developers, and second, with controlled experiments in the lab. So to give you an idea of what people built with it, so that we, some people built ability to control lights and devices in the home with a Kinect. You can just point at devices in order to turn them on and off rather than to having to actually articulate anything. Other people have used home energy meters, with the idea being that you could send an alert when your home is using an anomalous amount of energy, and that way you could try and figure out what's going on. People have built remote monitoring for everything from having a remote control car that can go around your house and let you look at everything to actually putting it in a teenager's car to get an idea of how they're driving and what's going on. And lastly, I like this application. It's an event notification system which can only fire on time, but also events like recognizing somebody's face in a camera. So you can imagine walking into home and having your home remind you, hey, did you pick up milk? I'm not sure that I would want it to remind me every time I walked in, but the idea that you can do this sort of cool, flexible event notification, I really like. So the field experiences were generally positive. Users were able to manage their Home OS deployments. In particular, we basically just handed them Home OS and some paper documentation and then said nothing. And we did talk with them. They were actually running it. 12 of them did actually run it in their homes. And they really provided them with no support, and they were able to get it up and running and do cool stuff. Of particular note, users really liked the ability to organically grow and extend their technology. So one person started off with just a single camera in their front yard. They wanted to watch it on their phones, so that way they could do neighborhood watch type things. They later added two more cameras, one inside, one in the backyard. They added a door window sensor so they could tell when the door was opened or closed. And they added an application that let them basically be emailed with pictures from all the cameras whenever their doors opened or closed while they weren't home, so they could see who was coming into and out of their houses. And then finally, they liked it enough, they actually added light controllers and actually started controlling the lighting in their house this way. And this is pretty typical of people. They wanted to sort of start off with one idea, and they gradually migrated to new or possibly different ideas. And this was possible in HomeOS, and it's really difficult to do in the alternative solutions that are available today. And lastly, developers found the programming abstractions to be and layering to be natural. I think the best evidence is the things I gave you on the previous slide, where people actually took the time to implement cool stuff. Not everything was great. Users found it hard to diagnose faults at times, especially when it comes to wireless protocols, where the culprit could be poor wireless signal strength, it could be the device fault, or it could be a software fault. And actually, the interoperability protocols provide almost no support to figure out where it is. And so a good opportunity for future work would be to try and think how we could build some support for this. Even something as simple as ICMP ping for Z-Wave would be really phenomenal. Second, interoperability protocols could be fragile. DLNA is a good example of this, where in HomeOS, we centralize the control plane, but not the data plane for things. So if two devices had a way to communicate at the data layer, we assumed they could. DLNA turns out not to guarantee that, because video can have different codecs. And they rely on whoever's coordinating the action to have enough smarts in order to figure out what the codecs are supported and how to configure them. And so we're considering trying to, at least for that particular application, centralize the data plane and possibly do live transcoding, because it's important enough that you actually want this to work. And lastly, not all device features are exposed over the network. And this might seem obvious to you that vendors would not want to expose everything, but it leads to unmet expectations. One person really wanted to display the text over the live video on their screen. They knew they could do it because that's how they got their caller ID, but it's not exposed. And our hope is that by making it easy to programmatically expose these things, that people will take that opportunity and actually make it possible to do cool stuff. So in terms of controlled evaluation, we had two different pieces. First, we had 10 developers that were asked to write one of two realistic applications with our test bed. One of them was Music Follows the Lights, where basically they had music play in rooms where the lights were on and stop playing where they weren't, using lights as a proxy for where people were in the house. And the second one was Custom Lights per User, which tried to recognize user faces in a camera and set the lights in that room to an appropriate level for that user. And 8 of the 10 were able to actually finish writing that application in less than 2 hours. I'm not saying that anybody can write any application for the home in 2 hours, but the fact that some people can write useful things in 2 hours is a pretty good indication that it's pretty easy to get up and running with this. And they had no prior experience with Home OS. We also invited 12 non-technical users to come in and try one of 7 different management tasks, again with no training. There was a 77% successful completion rate, 89% after we eliminated one outlier task. There are performance results in the paper. I'm not going to present them here, and I'd like to claim that I've given a systems talk without a single CDF in it, and I think that's an accomplishment that I'd like to list on my resume in the future. Actually, I think about even a single graph. That's kind of impressive. So there are graphs in the paper if you need graphs. So in conclusion, HomeOS eases extensibility and management by providing a PC-like abstraction to the technology in the home. In particular, this is in a contrast to either using a network of devices or an appliance abstraction, and we do this by sort of having logically all of the devices pretend as though they're peripherals to a single logical PC. Despite the fact this is real and been running, there are still lots of cool things to do. Two things that came up when we were actually deploying it. One is, what is the core set of capabilities that should be in every home? So what's the equivalent of like CPU, memory, disk, monitor, keyboard, mouse, but for homes, so that people can actually go build applications with a minimum set of requirements? And second, identity management, while critical for adoption, sometimes complicates things. You don't want people to enter a password to turn on the lights. So how can we provide non-intrusive identity inference? Cell phones provide one interesting platform. Physical presence might be enough in some instances. So how can we do this? I think that's a really interesting question. For more information or to request code, you can go to this link, or you can Google or Bing Home OS. It'll be the first hit. And with that, I'll take questions.
Aaron Gember, University of Wisconsin. So where is this running within the home? Just on a PC that exists out there, or is components of it distributed?
So that's a really good question. It runs on a single PC somewhere in the home. And the constraint is that it has to have access to the networks that communicate to the devices. So it's good if it's a PC that has, you know, like a Z-Wave radio on it and a connected to the right subnets and connected to, you know, the wireless as well. So there's some constraints there, but basically as long as you have it in a central place in the home. We could imagine you moving it to a router or moving it to maybe something like an Xbox, although Ritual tells me that I'm wrong about that. But there's reasons for that. But, yeah, PC in the home.
Hi, I'm Ron from Purdue. I just had one question. So mainly the Home OS, is it just dependent on these ZigBee or like these protocols which are kind of used for interoperability? Because mainly in closed systems, there are vendors, they only use file, like file and communication. They don't have any network stack. They use their own. So if I have to port those applications from a closed system to a Home OS, is it like feasible to do, or how easy, how hard it is going to be?
So I'll give two answers to that question. The first answer is that we implemented an IR transmitter driver, which can control anything that has an IR transmitter, so like home stereo electronics. So in some sense, you can do that. You just need a driver. I mean, there's no magic. I don't have any secret sauce that says I can control all closed devices. The other thing that we found is actually these standards are maturing, and that most devices you can buy, or at least there is a relatively inexpensive version of most devices you would want in your home that does have some standard API that you can go use. And this is just because, you know, that it makes it easier for them to write applications for your smartphone and things like that and actually play a part in this ecosystem that they want to be in.
Just continuation. So, I mean, if we are only using a file, it's possible that there are conflicts with two vendors. So is Home OS going to resolve these conflicts, or?
Certainly, if you have two pieces of hardware that actively conflict with each other, there's very little we can do to stop them from conflicting, since we don't. But I might not understand the question. If you're trying to talk about wireless PHYs?
Right. I mean, if you just have a PHY, I mean, there is some specific packet that is.
So, I mean, I need a driver somewhere in order to be able to talk to the devices. That's the level that we operate.
I think the question might be whether you do configuration management as well for things like devices.
No. Not right now. Actually, that's actually one area of future work that I'm kind of interested in is how, if you could reach lower into the networking stack, could you provide better debuggability, better security, and that kind of thing, if you could actually go in and control things. But that wasn't what we looked at in this work.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks. Perfect. I guess we have a break now for the next session.